everyone. Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavioral Therapy class series. A trained therapist and secular member of Overeaters Anonymous will teach us new DBT skills every week that can help manage emotions, which can often trigger overeating. To find out more about secular overeaters, visit the website, secularovereaters.org. Now let's begin today's class.
All right, so welcome to the last of this series, Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Class. My name is Susan P., and I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. I've been a CBT therapist for 36 years and a DBT therapist for over 10. I use DBT skills every day, and I'm excited to teach other OA fellows what has been so helpful to me and my clients. This meeting has been an ongoing class where we've been focusing on a different skill every week. This week, we're on our last week, week 8, and we'll be learning behavior chain analysis. If you're listening to this as a recording, you can check the podcast show notes for links to the materials I'll be reviewing today. Okay, I'm going to share a video, but let me give you a mindfulness exercise first. This one is called Don't Believe Everything You Think. This exercise is actually from a newish kind of treatment called ACT, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. I'm a big fan of it. It's a new wave CBT therapy. And one of the big ideas is, how do we get people to distance from thoughts that are causing them trouble? Because a lot of the time we'll think something and we won't realize actually it might not be true. The thing we're thinking of about ourselves might not be true. The reason we've decided that somebody hasn't called us back might actually not be what's really going on. And so this exercise gives us a little room between what we're thinking and realizing that it actually might not be 100% true. So the idea behind it is you recognize a thought and then you add the phrase, I'm having the thought that, in front of it. It's a simple technique, but it's pretty effective. Okay, so let's say that I'm thinking right now, I wonder if they're gonna think that this mindfulness exercise is stupid. And what I'm going to do is then say, I'm having the thought that the people are going to think that this mindfulness exercise is stupid. I want to give you some warnings ahead of time. A lot of times when you're instructed during a mindfulness exercise, any of us, to think about our thoughts or to pay attention to our thoughts, we don't have thoughts all of a sudden, right? They refuse to come. That's okay. Expect that. Just relax. Right? Take a few deep breaths and just relax. They'll come, right? The other thing that you might notice is you're having thoughts where they're not troublesome to you, right? So if you think those thoughts, it's perfectly fine. If you're thinking, I'm going to have this for lunch, you don't necessarily have a thought that's causing you trouble. But in the 2 minutes we're going to be doing this, you will have some thoughts that might be causing you trouble. I'm almost positive. Okay, so what we're going to do is get in a comfortable position. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable closing your eyes. Take a few nice deep breaths and get centered. And then just notice your thoughts, be aware of them. And I'll time us for 2 minutes. And when you recognize a thought, just put the phrase in front of it. Say the thought to yourself and put the phrase in front of it. I'm having the thought that. Now, if you're listening to this on the recording, this is a good time to stop your recording so that you can practice along with us. So here we go. Okay, everybody, come back into the room when you're ready. And I love this exercise because it starts to make you understand that what you're thinking isn't necessarily true. So it may not change your belief in that thought from 100% to 0%, but even if we go to 90% or 80%, having the realization that everything you think might not be true, especially if they're thoughts that cause you problems, that make you feel badly about yourself, or make you anxious, or make you angry, that's a good thing. Okay, thank you for doing that, everybody. Oh, is anybody interested in taking 1 to 2 minutes to tell us how you may have used one of the skills that you've learned over the last 7 weeks? Karen?
Gosh, I've used quite a lot of things. One is grounding. Grounding has helped so much with just not ruminating and stopping in the day and just, you know, I can feel things and I'm in reality. Get me out of my head. I've the half smile and the willing hands has helped a huge amount. I'm quite a reactive person, and especially last week, I had a very difficult meeting that I was just willing hands, and it helped a huge amount. And I definitely dealt with the situation better than I would have. There are more, and I can't even think of them now, but there's just, yeah. So those are two that are being so helpful. And also just naming things as well, just to get out of your head, you know, tree, branch, just things to get out of my head. So yeah, it's been
I'm so
great.
glad.
Thank you.
So glad. Thank you for telling us about it. So today we're gonna learn our final skill of this series, and it's called behavior chain analysis. And it's a way of figuring out whether the links in a chain to a problem behavior, right? What led to a problem behavior, and how do we figure out how to change one of those links, how to change one of the things that led to the problem behavior. So I want to show you a video that describes behavior chain analysis, and then I'm going to take you through one that I did 2 weeks ago for myself when I had a slip. Right? It was incredibly helpful in figuring out what led to it. When I figured out, it made total sense, and it was clear what I needed to do in order to not slip for the same reasons. So here we go.
Regret or that we don't like, we often respond in one of two ways. One way is to tell ourselves or others that we're just not going to do it again. The other way is to pretend like it didn't happen and bury our head in the sand. Unfortunately, neither of these methods is effective at reducing the likelihood of that behavior happening again. In fact, they may increase the probability of that behavior reoccurring, but that's a talk for another time. To truly change a behavior in a sustained way, we must understand the causes of the behavior and the consequences that are helping to keep the behavior around. One way to assess these factors is a strategy in dialectical behavior therapy known as chain analysis. Over the next few minutes, we're going to provide a crash course in chain analysis so that you can use this technique to help change behaviors that are getting in the way of you achieving your goals. Keep in mind that this video is just an overview of the technique and is not meant to be completely comprehensive or used in place of therapy. Let's begin by describing the elements of the chain. The first element that we focus on is the problem behavior, the behavior that we want to change. A problem behavior can be any number of things that you're looking to change. It can be yelling at your partner, forgetting to empty the dishwasher, placing a distracting animation in the middle of my talk. Once we define the problem behavior, we can move backwards or forwards to identify the other elements. Going backwards, we have something called the prompting event. This is the event that set off the chain leading to the target behavior. It's like the first domino to fall. If the prompting event hadn't occurred, then you likely would not have engaged in the problem behavior. Even earlier than the prompting event, we can identify vulnerability factors. Vulnerability factors refer to anything that makes us vulnerable to the prompting event in that instant. Being tired, hungry, lonely, in physical pain are examples of common vulnerability factors. The next element is links in the chain. These links describe what happened between the prompting event and the problem behavior. Links can be our behaviors, another person's behaviors, our thoughts, emotions, and bodily sensations. Imagine that you're watching a movie in slow motion and you can identify each precise factor that led to some big climactic scene. This is what we're doing when we're documenting links. We're looking at the precise details between the prompting event and the problem behavior so that we can later identify potential solutions. The last element of the chain analysis is consequences. Consequences refers to what happens following the problem behavior. There are two types of consequences, short-term and long-term. Long-term consequences are interesting and they can give us some useful information. And in chain analysis, we're often more focused on the immediate or short-term consequences because they have way more impact on the likelihood of the behavior occurring again. For example, the immediate pleasure of eating two cartons of ice cream is far more impactful on future ice cream eating behavior than the stomach ache we may experience a half hour later. Now that we have all the elements detailed, let's put them to work in the following example. Alex and Molly were having a night in. Alex made Molly's favorite meal, a vegan meatloaf, and they proceeded to watch a movie. Once the movie ended, Molly headed upstairs to bed while Alex went to turn off all the downstairs lights. When he entered the kitchen, he noticed that Molly had not put the dirty dishes from dinner in the dishwasher. Alex had earlier reminded Molly three times to put the dishes away, and they were still in the sink. Alex ran upstairs to their bedroom and started yelling at Molly. "You never listen to me. I asked you 100 times to put the dishes away, and they're still in the sink." "Stop freaking out. They're just dishes," Molly responded. Alex then begins to scream. "Just dishes? It's not just the dishes. You never listen to me. You're such a bleephole. I'm leaving." Alex stormed out of the house and ran to his car. While sitting in his car, Alex began to cry. "Why do I blow up like that?" "Great question, Alex. Let's use a chain analysis to help you understand why you blow up, the target behavior, so that we can figure out solutions for the future." Alex identifies the target behavior as screaming at Molly and calling her a bleephole. Alex then identifies the prompting event that set this whole kerfuffle into motion. If Alex hadn't seen the dirty dishes in the sink, he likely wouldn't have started yelling at Molly. So seeing the dirty dishes could be one prompting event. However, Alex identifies another prompting event that's closer in time to his target behavior, when Molly invalidated his feelings by telling him to stop freaking out. Alex acknowledges that he had some vulnerability factors going into the evening. He was exhausted from work and feeling stressed out about an upcoming project. These factors made him more vulnerable to Molly's comments than he might have been otherwise. Now, if we slow things down, Alex points out a series of links between Molly telling him to stop freaking out and then calling her a bleephole. First, he noticed the thoughts, "Molly never takes me seriously," and "she doesn't care about me," which were accompanied by feelings of sadness and anger. Alex observed his heart racing and physical discomfort. He noticed the thought, "this is unbearable," and wanting to get rid of that discomfort as quickly as possible. Then Alex noticed the thought, "if I'm not worth her time, then I'm going to tell her off and leave," accompanied by feelings of resentment and righteous indignation. And so Alex engages in his problem behavior of screaming at Molly. Alex notices that telling Molly off had the short-term consequence of cueing feelings of strength and empowerment, which felt good to him. It also had the long-term consequences of bringing about feelings of shame and regret. Now, what do we do with all this information? Understanding the factors or components that contribute to the presence of a problem behavior is necessary in order to best identify how to effectively make changes in the future. Over time, chains reveal patterns in how we react to certain events, thoughts, and feelings. With this information, we can break the chain of ineffective behavior and make wiser choices in the future. For Alex, solutions may include using distress tolerance skills when he notices that his emotions are prompting him to engage in this screaming behavior. Solutions may also include checking the facts and considering if the intensity of his anger fits the facts of Molly's invalidation, and if not, then modulating his behavior in response. A solution may also include for Alex to effectively communicate to Molly how leaving the dirty dishes impacts him, or to mindfully experience his emotions without acting on them. Now that we have this chain, we can identify several solutions to help Alex behave more effectively in the future. And the same goes for us. Using chains is a great way to understand and change our behavior so that we are more likely to behave in ways that help us achieve our goals and are consistent with our values.
All right, so I want to share with you the chain analysis I did for my slip. And then the second page will be a worksheet for you guys to use. Okay, here's my behavior chain analysis. The problem behavior was, this was 2 weeks ago, I sat at the kitchen table and ate some comfort food at 9 p.m. And my abstinence is no sugar, and I eat 3 times a day, generally at about 7, 12, and 5. I'm allowed to have a snack if a meal is going to be delayed by at least an hour, right? No meals were delayed. I didn't eat any sugar, but I did sit there at 9 o'clock, which is not something that's part of my meal plan, and ate some comfort food. So I did a chain analysis the next day. And the vulnerability factors were, by the way, vulnerability factors are really important. When you are vulnerable in some way, it means that your emotions are going to be more powerful and it's going to be harder to resist what your emotions are telling you. And for me, to like, I'm a pretty extreme introvert. I love people. I spend my day talking to people. That's my job. I live with 4 people, right? Right. It's not that I don't like to be social, but it means that it tires me out. And so the day that this slip happened, it was my longest work day. I had had 8 clients that day, right? So that's a lot of people to talk to. But even more importantly, it was 2 days after Mother's Day. And so on Mother's Day, right, we took my mom out. My mom's an extreme extrovert. We took my mom out for Mother's Day to a very long, sort of endless dinner. And so that was a lot for me. And then the following day on Monday, I only work half a day. I had to take my mother to the cardiologist, and she insists on going to a cardiologist that's an hour away. And so that meant 2 hours in the car with her as she told me stories over again for the, I don't know, 50th or 60th time, and not 1 second of quiet. In fact, one time I was on a trip with, when I'm much younger, with my mother and her best friend, and her best friend actually said to her, "Do you ever come up for air?" Because she never does. So I'd spent, it was about 4 hours with her, with her talking constantly. And then the next day was Tuesday, and that's my longest work day. And I was working from home. And usually I schedule 15 minutes in between each client to just give myself some time to write my notes and to kind of clear my head and have some quiet. But my husband kept coming in and talking to me in between and giving me things to do, like that I had to pay attention to and remember to do. So by the time I had finished, oh, and plus I didn't sleep well the night before. So by the time I finished work at 9 o'clock, right, my normal routine is that I sit in front of the TV for an hour and just relax and quiet. But my daughter is home from college and her girlfriend was visiting, and they were sitting in the family room in front of the TV. What? Okay. So I walked into the kitchen. So that was the prompting event. The event was that I walked in, right, and couldn't do what I would normally do. So my thoughts were, I was looking forward to relaxing and watching TV. Now, where do I go? Okay, I can go into the kitchen and sit at the table and read the newspaper, right? And the food I want to eat doesn't have any sugar in it, so it's okay, right? I'm not really messing up here. My feelings were I was exhausted and I was fidgety and restless, right? I was sort of on edge and restless. So I went into the kitchen, grabbed the comfort food, and ate it as I read the newspaper. Okay. Why didn't I do that? I did that because I also have ADHD, and it's hard for me to sit and read quietly without doing something, like without having some movement. And I know, now that I'm 63 years old, I have a lot of experience with knowing that I can concentrate better if I'm eating. All right. But I sort of did it without even really thinking. Okay. So what were the short-term consequences? I felt comforted and content and comfortable. That's the problem, right? This stuff works really, really well at soothing. The long-term consequences. I felt guilty. I worried that this might be a slippery slope, right? Oh, like I've been doing great for a few years at this point. I've been feeling so serene. I've been feeling like so not controlled by food. And I worry that, oh, is this sort of the downhill slope? I also gained a pound. Okay. So lessons learned. Number one, I have to talk to my husband about my need for quiet and uninterrupted time to get my notes done between sessions, which I did. And he's great and he understood. I just had never told him before that I need those 15 minutes. They're really important to me. It's not just a convenience thing, it's like a mental health thing for me. It is so important. Number two is I have to ban that comfort food from my home. I usually don't have it there. It was there because we had had guests and it was leftover, right? I don't need to have that in my house. And when guests come over, I can buy things that I don't like. That would be no problem at all. And then the third is if I can't relax in front of the TV, I can listen to my audiobook, which is really soothing for me, in a comfortable chair in the living room. So there's my chain. That's been so helpful to me. You know, there used to be this idea, at least in psychotherapy, that you have to get to the bottom of your issue so that you don't use things to soothe yourself, right? Like you have to get to the bottom of it. But in reality, that's just not true. Everybody needs ways to soothe themselves. We just want them to be ways that don't have negative consequences. And so what I did was I chose a way to soothe myself that had negative consequences in the long run. All right. Any questions about this? About chain analysis.
I
Okay.
just want to make a comment that it just seems a lot
Yeah.
like OA's action plan, you know, like going through and trying to figure out how not to do this again.
It is, right? It is. It was always so interesting. You know, I've been in OA for about maybe 2.5 years, but done DBT for 10 years, and it immediately occurred to me how consistent OA and DBT are, right? We use a lot of the same tools. So yeah, you're right. Now I'm going to ask you guys to do a chain analysis. Jenny, should I share the screen again so people can see the worksheet? I'm going to share it with you just now for a second, just so you can see what it looks like. So look, it has little prompting questions in case you have questions. So for example, vulnerability factors. Did anything make me more likely to engage in the problem behavior? Was I sick, tired, hungry, lonely, upset? What was the prompting event? So there are some prompts there for you.
I'm going to open up the rooms.
Everybody back?
Yeah.
So how'd that go? Does anybody want to share what that process was like?
I think it was quite a lot of my one. I mean, for me, it's helpful. I just feel bad that Tom and Melissa didn't really get a chance to go through the steps.
So the next time, right, there's a behavior that you wish you hadn't done. This is a great procedure to go through, right? And afterwards, you feel like, oh, lessons learned, right? One of the best ways to think about engaging in problem behavior is it's an opportunity to learn something so that we don't repeat it again, right? And so, you know, for me, I love the saying that mistakes are the portal to discovery. Right? Where there are no mistakes, only learning opportunities. I love that, right? This idea is okay, it happened. And what did I learn from it? And what am I going to do better next time? And for me, having that talk with my husband was very important, right? You know what? You haven't done anything wrong, right? You're just coming in to talk to me. And you know, I usually love to talk to you, but I need that little time in between my sessions in order just to write my notes and to have some quiet, right? And he knows that about me. We've been together a really long time. He knows. I just never had that talk with him before. It wasn't relevant before COVID because I wasn't working from home at all, but now it was. And so that was really important discovery for me that's one of the things that I really need for myself. Okay. All right. Any questions about the process or how to use it when you need it? Tom?
I think it's going to be really useful because I do find myself in situations where I feel such shame afterwards and such uncomfortableness. So it would just be really good to go back and step it out. So I think it's going to be a really, really useful tool. One of many that you've shared with us, Susan. So thank you.
Well, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, we can use every opportunity to learn something about ourselves. And shame. You know, like I get it because I experienced the same thing. But when, you know, but when you think about it, why? Right? Yeah. Everybody makes mistakes. Nobody's perfect. All right. So that's all the time we have for today's class. And again, this is our last class. It's been such a great experience for me. Thank you so much for participating, and we'll, you know, see you at a later date and we figure out what we want to do next.
Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a small donation.